So the big question is this: how do most agents who don't have access to the secrets that most successful agents hoard to themselves grow and prosper in today's competitive real estate environment? That's the question. And this podcast will give you the answers. I'm Pat Hyben, and welcome to Real Estate Rockstars. Okay, Rockstar Nation, I got a great guest today coming from sunny California. Mr. Joel Goodrich is on the line. Joel, welcome to Real Estate Rockstars.
Hey, it's great to be here. How are you doing, Pat?
Man, I'm doing great. You know, Joel's a billion-dollar agent, and I could probably leave his bio at that, but I'm going to let him kind of give a little bio, tell you a little bit about him personally so you guys can get to know him better. Joel, why don't you kind of give us a little rundown on who you are and that sort of thing.
Well, Pat, I've been in the business 28 years now and started off in 1992. Started off selling $100,000 condos. It's been quite a journey since then. Had my first $1 million sale back in 97, my first $5 million sale in 99, and $10 million sale in 2004. And it kind of got up from there. Last year, we sold a home for $32 million. Currently, our listings range from 5 to 40 million. So it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you said that, Joel, because it gives, you know, there's a lot of people that think, you know, I'd love to get into luxury and that sort of thing. So it's good to see that you started out selling $100,000 homes and now you're selling $40 million homes. So it just goes to show you that you can do it if you're listening. And I'm going to try to find out why from Joel. I mean, how from Joel, you know, he went from where he did to where he is now. All right, good. Well, let's talk about today's business. Like, you know, $40 million homes, like how many of those, I mean, generally you only got to sell one or two of those to have a great year. Like how many houses would you say you've sold in the last 12 months?
Yeah, 2018 volume was about 111 million.
Okay.
I don't really keep track of the number of sales. My average sales price is around 8 to 10 million. So, yeah, it was a super year, just my best year ever. So I was very excited.
So like we have a thing on the show we call ECI because agents like to talk about their GCI, gross commission income. We call it ego commission income. But what really counts, of course, is your net. But like what would you say your GCI is or your ECI is on those $100, $120 million?
Last year, my gross was about 2.2.
That's great. That's great. And what's your profit margin roughly?
Oh, you know, I spend a lot of money on marketing my properties because that's what we do for our owners. So, you know, we probably have, 50% expenses.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You know, you're still a seven figure guy and got it under control. Now, is it just you? Do you have a team? How's that set up?
Well, I do have quite a team. Currently, I have my main associate who works with me, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. And then I'm partnering with 10 different agents on different buyers and listings. I have a marketing person and a transaction coordinator.
Wow. And okay, so the marketing person, the transaction coordinator, that we can understand, everybody knows. What I think is different is when you say I'm partnering. Tell me about that. Like, how does that work? Like, because most agents listening, you know, like, if I get a listing, it's mine. They don't think about partnering. But I know in luxury, you have that.
Oh, absolutely. To get a property covered 24/7, 365, no one person can do it. And it's all about servicing the client. So we absolutely have to, you know, make sure that we have all of our properties covered. And to do that, I partner with different agents depending on the kind of listing it is or buyer it is.
So are you partnering with someone in a different area? Like if you don't want to, you know, it's 2 hours away or that sort of thing. Or are you partnering with an agent just to give him a portion, him or her a portion of the commission because you have to, listing agent must accompany every showing?
I do get a lot of calls to list properties outside of San Francisco because of my marketing reach. And whenever I get those calls, I do make clear from the beginning that love to talk to them. And a lot of times these are amazing properties. Currently, we have a $35 million winery estate listed in the Napa Valley, which is extraordinary. We have a $38 million oceanfront in Southern California. But in each of those cases, I am partnering with my top colleague, local colleague in that area. And that way, the seller has the best of all possible worlds. They have a very deep local presence as well as a broader marketing reach. So that's the whole purpose in the partnering is to make sure that the client and the listing is fully serviced.
Well, there's probably a sense of relief in that, Joel, right? Because, you know, when you're listing a $30 million property, I imagine you're beholden to that seller until that sells.
Absolutely. Yeah. We are marketing nonstop on that. And,
but you personally, like on your cell phone, I mean, like you literally, if you went to India, you know, you would have to take a call from that guy or girl.
Oh yeah. No, I do not disconnect. I've done some traveling over the years, less the last few years, but when I'm traveling, it's like I'm in the office. I am 24/7. Absolutely.
Yeah,
sometimes 24/8. I'm on a busy week.
I like that. It should be 25/8. Yeah, 25/8.
Yep.
Yeah, no, but that makes a sense. And that's what you got to get into. But if you have a partner, it helps with that, right? And I can see why you would want to do
absolutely.
That. And there's certainly enough juice in there to do it. You know what I mean? It's not like you're giving away half of $3,000, you know?
Well, you know, money is obviously important. That's what we do in business is make money. But primarily, it's getting the job done well for the client, because then everything comes from that. So that is the overall priority, is how is the client best served? Yeah. And I would never take, for example, we have a beautiful estate in Silicon Valley for $17 million. I'm working with my top local colleagues in that area. And so the client is really well served because, again, they have the best of all possible worlds.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so here's what everybody really wants to know, if you don't mind me jumping to the chase. They want to know how. And I know you've been at it a long time. You were licensed in 1982. I got my license in 87. So I can, you know, I'm on the same trajectory here. So, but that's a long time. But we all know you get rich slowly and you succeed slowly, and it takes time. But the question is, you know, how did you go from selling $100,000 condos to $40 million? And basically now you don't take anything under $5 million, right?
No, we, some of our younger tech clients, and San Francisco has a large condominium market. So we do actually have a listing for $2 million, and we work with some younger clients in the $1 to $3 million range. Absolutely.
Okay.
So, but
under
right
a million.
Now,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how'd you do it?
How did I do it? Well, I started out selling $100,000 condos. it's quite a journey. Yeah, and I knew that I wanted to get into the luxury market. When I started my career, I really didn't have any money or social connections or any of that. But I was determined to get into the luxury market. So my very first listing was a $125,000 co-op, and staging at the time was just starting to become popular. So I was able to buy a couple of orchids, and I put two really nice chairs on each side of the fireplace, and it looked really beautiful. It was my first little quarter-page real estate ad. I got so many calls on that one ad, and people would call and say, Joel, this looks like a $1 or $2 million apartment. How come it's only $125,000? So that kind of started launching me. And then, yes, the most valuable piece of advice I got when I started the business was to do a business plan. So in 1992, I did a two-page business plan. And every year that business plan grew till by about 2000, it was 35 pages long. And every year my business was double. I thought, wow, there's really something to this business plan thing. So I got started to ask to talk about business plannings at the Chamber of Commerce here in San Francisco, some sales meetings, et cetera, et cetera. So again, my best advice is do a business plan. So a major part of my business plan was networking. And I call it dining for dollars, better than dialing for dollars. Yeah, so I decided that I was going to get out there and meet people. So every opportunity I got, I went to business events, social events, charitable events, and just started meeting all kinds of interesting people. And through those connections, I evolved. And again, in started in 92. I think in 1995 was my first $1 million sale. I thought, wow, this is amazing. So it just kind of took off from there. And I really, you know, I worked hard to make sure that my marketing materials looked very high end. And that helped launch me in the luxury world.
So talk to me about, you know, like back then, like back in the day, how many of these events did you go to, and how often, and what advice can you give to someone who just wants to start a plan to do what you did?
Well, when I did my business plan, I did not read any books on business planning because I wanted to come from me. I wanted to create my own plan. So I came up with this plan, and I also have a daily business plan, which I divide into five sections. And it gives you a focus that you don't have without having something in writing in front of you. So I just, like I say, every year that I did my plan, it grew, and so did my business.
And would you say it just kind of was a gradual thing? You started getting, you got a listing for $1 million, then you got a listing for two, then you got, was it kind of like that, or did one particular thing happen?
Well, you know, I think you have to be prepared for what's going to happen. So what I did is I made sure I did my homework. I made sure I knew the market inside out, that every appointment, every showing I went to, I was fully prepared with market knowledge, with knowledge of the property. And that way, when opportunity presents, you're ready to seize that opportunity. So preparation is key. And there's an old real estate saying that knowledge builds confidence, and confidence is what builds enthusiasm, and enthusiasm is what sells. Mm. So it all starts with knowledge.
How competitive is it? You know, how competitive is...
Yeah. Extraordinarily competitive. There are close to 6,000 agents in San Francisco. But I don't look at it as a competition. I just think I'm going to do the greatest job I can possibly do, and it's just going to happen. So I grew up actually being a competitive skater, so I have a very strong competitive background. But I found by looking at it less from a competition point of view and just from a point of view as how, what is the greatest possible job I can do, that it's helped me.
Why do you think sellers choose you in a competitive situation with other agents? And usually in your competition, they're not interviewing new agents. They're interviewing agents like yourself that are formidable opponents. So how do you win?
Well, I think you're right. When I go out on, there are clients who will just call me and want to work with me. There are other clients who will interview anywhere from 2 to 7 agents. And in that case, they are interviewing the top agents in San Francisco, all of whom probably have sold $1 billion or more. So how do I differentiate myself? Several ways. One of it is my marketing. Again, I've worked hard to develop my own marketing style. I've just started working with one of the top branding experts in the country, and it's kind of not ratcheted my marketing up yet to another level. And the other thing that I did is about 5 years ago, I was reading what was billed as the largest survey ever done of online marketing. And they were ranking the importance of email, social media, SEO, search, everything. And they came to the conclusion that email is still the best form of online marketing. So that got me to thinking, I thought, what can I do that will really catch people's attention? So I developed a global luxury real estate report, which is both informational, but also kind of entertaining. And so I started off with a database of 5,000 people. We now have 30,000 people on our database who receive this global luxury real estate report. I do put my listings in there editorially. So it's an extraordinary one-of-a-kind marketing tool for my sellers, and that no one else can offer. Your listing, the day it goes on the market, is going to 30,000 high-end people and agents around the world, and 45,000 people via social media. So that's a pretty strong reach, because this database encompasses a lot of Silicon Valley and San Francisco business communities, social communities, the top national and international agents around the world who may have clients for my listings. So I get great response to this report. We tend to get a 30% click rate, which is a lot higher than.
And wait a minute. And how often do you put this report out?
Well, I try and do it every month.
Wow.
Yes, I try to. This year, I've only done it every other month because it's been such an extraordinarily busy year. But I will do another one by the end of the year, and hopefully next year.
What would one see if they were to look in this report?
Well, there's a lot in there. We talk about luxury real estate around the world. We do some celebrity sales. What are the latest, most interesting celebrity sales? What are some of the most extraordinary properties on the market or have just sold? Just incredibly historic properties, whether it's a chateau in France, a villa in Lake Cuomo, a penthouse in Manhattan, a mansion here on San Francisco's Gold Coast, things that really catch people's attention. And so I will send you a copy and hope you enjoy it. I've gotten some great comments. One of my clients who lives in New York says, Joel, it's kind of like the page six of luxury real estate. Of course, page six is the famous New York column.
Yeah, page six, and that's where they have the topless model on the front. So I don't right. Well, this is the British one.
No.
The British one does.
But, the British one, not the New York one.
The
New York one is more social.
But I'm excited to see that. And by the way, guys, that's his free gift today, which we're going to put in his show notes if you want that. Of course, I'm premature in this, but it'll be on hybendigital.com/ Joel Goodrich. And it's like the two very positive words, good and rich. hybendigital.com/ Joel Goodrich. I'll put a copy of this report. So, Joel, how do you get this in the hands of so many people? It's one thing to write this sucker, but then how do you distribute it to all these people? Do you send it to other real estate offices and you just have collected those addresses? What do you do? Like,
every single time I get an email from anyone, I put it into, we use MailChimp for our database.
Okay, yeah, I've used MailChimp in the past.
MailChimp is able to send it out to 30,000 people at the same, just simultaneously. And again, we worked hard on the database. Every time I go to a social event, I'll get one or two or three business cards. I probably get, maybe five new email addresses a day. You multiply that by 350 days in the year, you're getting, and then also my social media person that I work with is collecting a lot of email addresses. So we're really busy, building up that database because it is vital. It exposes our listings to an extraordinary group of people, and all of whom could be potential clients, future clients or current clients.
Do you know if he or she, your social media person, has extended it to Messenger on Facebook?
We do have a very strong social media following. My Instagram posts tend to get 3,000 to 9,000 likes, which is very good.
Holy dirt, really? Wow. What's your IG?
It's Joel Goodrich one, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find, Joel Goodrich.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I'm going to follow you. That's crazy.
Check it out.
That's amazing. So, okay, cool. So what is the market like right now in San Francisco? What is the luxury market like?
It's stable, but not red hot. We have some very positive things going on. The stock market has had a good year so far. We have some IPOs in Silicon Valley and San Francisco that have done well. Lockup periods for those IPOs are about to end. Unemployment in San Francisco was at 1.9%, which is an extraordinarily low number. But there are also some economic cross currents and weakening the global economy. So all in all, our market's stable.
And a couple of questions on that. So when you say lockup periods on IPOs, basically that means that employees or people in the company are going to get paid cash or be able to sell their stock, at least because it's been a period of 6 months or so after their company went public and they, are able to cash out, kind of, so to speak, right? And then in your perspective, then they're able to buy condos and buy houses.
Exactly. There's generally a 6-month lockup period, which a lot of those for some of the IPOs earlier this year are expiring in October, November. So we are seeing that effect. We've always had a very strong buying pool of technology executives and workers and CEOs and founders buying here in the city. And that's not going to change. We also see a huge influx of national and international buyers because San Francisco is a big business destination. Everyone needs a presence in Silicon Valley.
Fascinating. Okay. So when would you say it was at its peak?
the hottest part of the market was probably 2015 through 17. We'd had a huge run up from the low of 2011. Our commercial market is red hot. The dollar per square foot asking is now, they're asking $100 a square foot in the new area of Mission Bay where the Oracle Arena is, the Warriors Stadium. And so the commercial market is red hot. Facebook leased an entire 57-story tower. Instagram got 40 stories on another tower. So we're having a lot of workers and technology executives here in town, and we're the tech capital of the world. So people need a presence here.
Isn't that crazy? Instagram got 40 levels in a tower. I mean, it's an app, right? It's a little app, but it's huge. That's crazy, man.
The power of technology. The power
God, of technology. Who would have thought, right? 12 years ago. Oh, yeah. Well, this little app thing here is going to have 40 levels in this high rise in San Francisco. Yeah, right.
You know, who would have thought? Yeah, it's really an amazing new world, and it shows no signs of slowing down. I'm very bullish on the next 10 years in San Francisco and Silicon Valley. One of the leading tech forecasters, Peter Diamandis, he founded the XPRIZE, which is kind of like the Oscars of technology.
Yeah, he's a futurist. Yep. Like that guy. Very interesting.
He founded Singularity University. So my favorite article of 2018 was his article called The Convergence of Eight Technologies. So the whole gist of the article was that in previous decades, there was one technology driving innovation and therefore the economy and therefore real estate. In the 60s, it was the mainframe. In the 70s, it was the computer chip. In the 80s, it was the personal computer. In the 90s, it was the internet. Last decade, it was smartphone and search. This decade, he's saying that artificial intelligence is playing off eight other technologies to create growth that is going to be even more exponential than in the past. It's going to be more exponential and also more unpredictable. So even more exponential tech innovation means even stronger economy and stronger real estate market. So I'm very bullish over the next 10 years for San Francisco and Silicon Valley.
Okay, so like how much of that is hopium though, and how much of that is analyzed? Because, you know, a lot of people listening to this would be like, hey, you know, that's great, but we're in a bubble, right? And the bubbles pop, right? And it's just a matter of time. I mean, 10 years for the market to continue to extend and get better and better for the next 10 years. Isn't that overly optimistic?
No, I'm not saying it's going to keep getting better and better every year. We've been in a kind of a stable plateau in the last 4 or 5 years. So I don't think we're quite in a bubble. And most economists are predicting perhaps a mild recession around 2020, 2021. Although they've been saying that since 2015. So we'll see. So no, I think we're going to have a period of stability, and then at some point in the next decade, have another boom. So no, I'm not saying that.
So you think it'll go down, and then it's going to go up, but really quick? Because last time we went up almost too fast. A lot of people think, you know, we recovered quick.
2008 was a huge bubble, as was 2000.
Yeah,
we had a big.
Both of those, we bounced back quick as shit. You know, both of those were like boing. You know.
Yeah, but this time around, we had a strong run-up from 2009 to 2015, and since then, you know, kind of stable. So we're not as bubbly as we were, which is healthy. So
equilibrium.
Again, but I think 10 years from now, we'll be at a different price plateau than we are today.
What do you tell somebody? Let's say you're going on a listing appointment, right? 25, 30 million bucks. And they're like, you know, Joe, how long is this going to take to sell?
That all depends on pricing. In the luxury and ultra luxury market, you really can't underprice a market and a property and expect multiple offers. So typically we do an analysis and we have a range of value and tend to price it toward the high end of that range. And a lot of times we won't go onto the open market. We don't want the whole world to see it. We don't want days on market ticking. And a lot of times we've had success in selling the properties off market. Now, some properties, high-end properties, become very public. And there have been, you know, very well-known examples of properties selling for 30 to 50% of the original asking price. There was an estate in Silicon Valley that started off at $100 million, sold for $28 million. well-known estate in Bel Air that started off at $200 million, sold for $102 million. So that can happen. So it's a very different pricing than the normal market. So yes, but then we have the people who will, properties that may not be for sale and someone wants it and get an astronomical price. So the ultra luxury market is like the art market. It's somewhat subjective, but
somewhat subjective. Art. That's interesting.
Yes, it is.
It could literally have somebody buy it the first day and then not have anyone buy it for 2 years.
Correct.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question. Like, what is the longest you've gone without a showing on a listing?
I would say 4 weeks.
A month. So you had it on the market, the sign went up. You're like, yeah.
Oh, you mean in the beginning? Oh, yeah.
No, yeah, in the beginning. Or anytime. Yeah. Anytime where you're just like.
In the beginning, we do tend to get some showings fairly quickly.
Yeah, that generally happens, right? And then there's like the aftermath, which is after the first 12 days. Yeah. Then it's like dead. What do you say when that happens? What's your script?
Well, we're going to keep giving a good hard marketing push, both in terms of micro marketing and in other words, picking up the phone and calling the few people in the world or their agents or their financial advisors who can purchase this kind of property, as well as the overall broader marketing push. So again, it is a question of timing and marketing and the right buyer.
And what do you say to sellers when they say, Joel, look, I feel like I'm on the market, but off the market, you know, no one's looking at it.
Well, again, that can be a question of pricing or market conditions. If the market is in a soft spot, you don't want to let a property linger on the multiple listing service too long if it is on the open market. If it's not on the open market, then the thought might be, well, go on to the open market to get more activity. So we're constantly evolving our strategy to make sure that the property does get sold in the time frame that the owner is looking at.
Right. And so how often do you recommend a price reduction on your listings now?
Oh, there's no set time frame. It's really dependent upon the market activity and market conditions. So we analyze every property individually, and if it's warranted, we will say, you know, we've been on 6 weeks, we haven't got the activity we like, could be time for a 5 to 10% reduction.
I find with a lot of agents, it's a defense. It's not as analytical as you just said. How you do it is very analytical.
I am very analytical. Yes, I at UC Berkeley, I majored in biomedical science. Unfortunately, my brother became a doctor, so my mom was happy. But I did get an A+ in calculus. So I like numbers. So I am very analytical. So I think that really helps the client make an informed decision in terms of where to do the initial pricing. Then if we do need an adjustment, I will do a new analysis. And they can make an informed decision based on some hard numbers.
Most agents, you know, their decision as to when to ask for a price reduction is based on a defensive posture. Meaning, if they list two houses the same day and neither of them are selling, and one of them is calling them every week or texting them every week and saying, "What's going on with my house?" They're going to tell that one to reduce their price because they want to be able to get it sold, and they want to also give a solution to that person that's very anxious. If the other person isn't calling them or reaching out to them at all, they probably won't ask that person to reduce their price in the same manner or at all. So it's very defensive. You know, it's like, oh, squeaky wheel gets the price reduction.
I'm not like that. If there's a change in the market, or we're not getting the activity level that we're seeing, I do alert the owner that, hey, we're not getting the activity level or the market has shifted. And so they can make an informed decision. If they're in no hurry, that's fine too. But if they want to sell within a certain time frame, we do need to advise them pricing can be an issue.
Yeah, very interesting. Yep. Yep. All right, Joel. Well, listen, let's talk a little bit about your free gift. Tell everybody, you know, you've mentioned it already, but I just want some more detail. Tell them what it's about and what we're giving them.
Well, basically, what I'll be sending you is my 2019 Global Luxury Real Estate Report. And let's see, a few of the highlights here. We do talk about, I have a 2019 crystal ball, and part of it was the, we were talking about the global boom that was happening in the $25 million plus sales. We're talking about also the latest Starkitect craze in Silicon Valley. Frank Gehry did the Facebook headquarters and some other interesting things. There was a record San Francisco sale. And then we're talking about in Bel Air, the war of the mega mansions. Also, we just sold a beautiful Art Deco penthouse in the middle of downtown San Francisco, and beautiful photos of that, as well as some of these other properties. And so it's kind of a tour of worldwide global luxury real estate in one column. So we attend, again, we get some incredible feedback on this, and it's fun to see some of the reactions. We're also talking about some of the celebrity sales, Ralph Lauren sale in the Hamptons, et cetera, et cetera. So there's some very interesting, and then the Vanderbilt Mansion in Manhattan, how that sold. So a lot of very interesting things that people want to hear about.
And people love that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we keep it entertaining as well as informational.
I love it. Yeah, yeah, that's good stuff. So, guys, so it's going to be on hybendigital.com/Joel Goodrich. And I'm also going to put it in the Agent Success Toolbox, which can be found on hybendigital.com/toolbox, or simply texting the word toolbox to 444-999. You can get Joel's report, plus you can get hundreds of other downloadable items that are that other guests have brought. Joel, listen, if I'm ever in the Bay Area, I will definitely look you up. We'll get together and break some bread. And the Rockstar Nation thanks you. I'm going to put Joel's IG. I'm going to put his all his social media links. I'm going to put, because you definitely should follow him and see how it's done. And if you want to reach out to him, all his information will be in his show notes as well. hybendigital.com/Joel Goodrich. Joel, thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Pat. It's been a real pleasure. Appreciate it. And have a great day and happy selling.
Rockstar Nation, thank you for listening to Real Estate Rockstars. Listen, I need a favor. If you find this free content helpful, if you find our downloadable items from each guest helpful, please, I need you to pull out your pointing finger. Yes, the one finger that points at people, and hit subscribe. Yes, subscribe. The more subscribers we get, the better we look in the ratings, and the easier it is to get guests like Robert Kiyosaki, Barbara Corcoran, all the players that are on $1 million listing in the different cities. All that stuff makes it easier the more subscribers we get. So please subscribe. And listen, there's a lot of places you can leave comments. There's a lot of places you can like. We're on Facebook. We have an Instagram page. Instagram page is I Am Pat Hyben. The Facebook is Real Estate Rockstars Radio. Feel free to leave us comments there. The most popular form of commenting seems to happen on YouTube. Yes, for whatever reason, it's a very open environment. So just go to YouTube and go to Real Estate Rockstars Radio and leave us comments there. Some of them we will read on the show. And we love your feedback. So thanks, guys, and I hope you are having a great day. Oh, and also, listen, if you're going to subscribe and you haven't already left us a review on iTunes, please do that too. Have a great day, and thanks so much, Rockstar Nation. I really appreciate you.